Welcome to Shotgun Story, the podcast that has conversations with indie creators about music, meaning, and the point of it all, so that you may be inspired by the journeys of other artists who are doing it for themselves, and maybe gain a little more understanding as to why it matters quite so much that you keep creating. So it's been a while since I've recorded an episode of the podcast. I've been a little preoccupied making some new music, which is actually the point of this episode. I have Daniel Friedman in studio with me, a guest on a previous episode. Now, his episode is well worth listening to, and I will put a link to it in the show notes. He used to be a music journalist, a writer, a columnist, a singer-songwriter, and he spent a decade doing comedy. He's been hiding in the advertising industry, waiting for the next step, which has something to do with kids' music.
Yeah, I mean, part of it is Interrupting Sheep, which we've already got our first track out. It's me and a singer-songwriter known as Shotgun Tori. I don't know if you've heard of her.
No.
Yeah, so Tori and I have been working together. Yeah, that's a fun one. But today, we are strictly talking about the new EP, which is It's Gonna Be Fine. I told you that I was once a music journalist. I'm putting that hat back on for this, to chat to you about your new EP.
Most excitingly, though, Daniel interviewed Ben Harper, Violent Femmes, and now he's interviewing me, little old me.
Well, I think I told you, like, the two most famous people I ever interviewed, you know. I mean, I also interviewed, you know, probably most of the people that you know, like, you know, Nips van der Spey and Laurie Levine, and you know what I mean?
Yeah. So,
but, yeah, and I mean, also bands that were, like, famous for a week in 2008 I interviewed as well. But yes, I did interview Ben Harper, and it was a big deal for me. And I actually had to fight to get that interview. We used to get a list of all the names we could interview, and I was like, I have to talk to Ben Harper. And it was amazing. It's nice to talk to people about their music because they're passionate about it.
Yeah, totally.
When did you start writing for this?
Kind of mid-COVID. In fact, I had a online live concert. What are those called? Live streams.
Yes.
I had a live stream, and I had to figure out a way to get my sound right. So I contacted Van Abuerta at Music Experience in Cape Town, and he sent through a digital interface, and it changed my life.
Oh, yes. I've seen this digital interface. So it allows you to record in your bedroom, right?
Exactly.
And so you started getting these songs down in the middle of lockdown. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of references to lockdown in the lyrics as well.
Yeah.
And that's probably the first thing I want to explore, which is that what I found interesting about it, you're a confessional singer-songwriter.
Yeah.
All your songs have always been based on your own life, and it's still the case now. But what I found is that despite it being a lot about lockdown and about some other heavy stuff that happened in your life, it seems to have a bit of a, even its name, its title, its cover, and its sound, it just seems to have a bit of a hopeful edge.
Yes, that is totally, and not by design. It's just what seems to have come out. I feel lighter. And you know what's funny? On this last little tour I did in Cape Town, a friend of mine came up to me who's known me since the beginning of my music career. And she said, I just want to know something. Is this the answer to Are We Fine Yet? Which was my first EP. And I said, well, I guess kind of the themes are different. I mean, there's one song that is like the theme of that entire EP, which that EP was so sad. And this is like, I'm a different human being, and I'm really grateful for that.
But it was just thing after thing after thing. And in a way, you know, you would expect this album to be relentlessly dark, but I feel like it's almost like less than a lockdown album. It's more like a coming out of lockdown album.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I love the sound of that. Yes.
Another thing is like your early stuff. So Are We Fine Yet? Be Brave, that sort of stuff. It was like we were younger, and it's almost like at that stage in your life, like a heartbreak can last a year.
Yeah.
Whereas now this feels like also a bit like your adult album in a way.
Yeah.
Even the fact that you've got an entire song about queuing at Home Affairs, that's something that it's not your deepest emotions as much as it's just normal everyday frustration. And that's what I get from this album. It's like an album to me, which is an EP, which is like you making sense of being an adult.
Yes. It's so nice to hear it mirrored back, because that's exactly, there's something about getting older that gives you perspective.
You know, it's not the sense of like one heartbreak is going to last you the whole year. It's more like a sense of like, okay, this is over, let's pick up the pieces, let's move on. And that's a lot what I get from this EP as well.
So I think what's interesting, let's just talk about that for a second, is, and it's that song Unfolded on the EP, I spent a lot of time processing internally without even realizing that's what I was doing. And I suppose that also has its own damaging effects outside of me. But all of this processing is happening and we're going through this turmoil. I was going through this turmoil for years. And so by the time it reached its end, it came out already processed for me.
So it's almost like, you know, the album, as always, your music is cathartic.
Yeah.
And it's almost like the process, you know, it resolved itself within the EP, that you kind of can walk after it saying, you know, it's going to be fine.
Yeah.
You know, obviously the title track is also It's Going to Be Fine. Mm. And that's also for me. So that's, to me, the tone that I almost get from the whole project, which is that it's the sense of, like, all the darkness is still there. You're still talking about lockdown. You're still talking about relationships. You're talking about heavy things.
Yeah.
But there's this sense of feeling like a sense of hope about it, a sense that everything is going to be okay.
Yeah, that's exactly. I believe that everything is going to be okay. And in fact, I started this little campaign about it, which has come about so naturally. I asked a friend to send me a video saying it's going to be fine to count down the 20 days before the release of the album. And all the friends I asked were musicians. And as I released them, I realized that's the truth. Artists have always led the way. So I always use Arts on Main as an example for it, is that artists go into areas that others would fear to tread, and they make them something beautiful, and then essentially they always get gentrified, which is not ideal, and then the artists can no longer afford to live there. But it's the same thing. Emotional spaces is that the artists go places that it's hard. They look at things that are difficult to look at, and they process them for people. And then everyone else gets them in this pretty little package of a song or a piece of art, and they're like, oh, that perfectly mirrors my experience, and it makes it easier to go through it too.
And it almost paves the way for people to be able to, because I feel like if this album was released during lockdown, it would have been a very different album. There was this thing, Bo Burnham, he's a like comedian, singer-songwriter, he did his thing during lockdown, and it was so relentlessly dark. And at the time, people loved it just because that was the mood. But it almost feels like when I said it's a coming out of lockdown EP, I feel like it's kind of the sense of like how much more soul searching and depression and all of that stuff can we have now. It's time to walk out into the light. That's what I got from it.
Totally.
Sonically, it's got like moodiness, it's got textures to it which you've never done before. The acoustic guitar is there, but it's kind of like it's not, you know, it's not always front and central in the mix, and you've got all these different sounds. The, you know, the main one's lap steel, then you've got a double bass, and then you've got a lot of trumpet in there. Have you ever had, you know, any of that sort of stuff in your past projects?
We had trumpets in Be Brave, but on like one track.
One track.
I've had bass and never the lap slide, actually. It was different. It was like, what was interesting about it is using the interface. When I wrote the songs, I went into my bedroom and I recorded the guitar and the vocals, and then I played. And I started kind of writing bass lines and getting a sense of like of the production of a complete piece of music. And so taking those things into studio and then saying, what do we need to kind of mimic what I made without mimicking it? I had some friends who were pretty attached to it who'd heard it, who said, you have to make it exactly like that. And I would have loved to, but things never work that way.
I mean, I must say, I heard the early ones, the ones you did in your bedroom, and I was like, this is perfect, just release it just like that. But then when I heard the resulting tracks after you spent time in the studio, I was glad you didn't listen to me, because, you know, it's often like you get so attached to one version of it that you don't see it as something else. But like, what really makes it fun when you hear the produced version is what all those different collaborators bring. So I guess my question is now, if you're listening to this and you have no idea who's involved in this project, let's start with those three things, because I know they weren't the only people involved, but who provided that amazing double bass?
That was Nick Rumpelt. Then on lap slide, Richard Brains.
of course, who I used to know as Source Tone.
Exactly.
When I was a music journalist, we would interview him. We would cover his projects as well. And it's amazing to see that he's still on the scene.
He is remarkable.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Justin Sassman on brass.
Yes, I also know Justin. Very good, very good trumpeter. Yes.
Yes.
His kid goes to the same school as mine, so we see each other at pickup sometimes.
I love how small the world is.
Yeah.
He doesn't only play trumpet. He plays a flugelhorn.
Oh, wow.
He plays the trombone.
Oh, wow. So he just brought, like, all of his wind instruments.
He arrived with everything.
Like a box.
It was joyful. It was so good.
I like that.
On drums, Peter Aurette.
Mm.
On acoustic guitar, Sean Franklin. So now I didn't record any of my acoustic guitar.
So that's not you we hear in all the songs?
No.
Okay. Why, that's the interesting decision. What made you decide not to play your own guitar when that's what you would do live?
Yeah. So I normally would, and I sat down to record the scratch tracks in studio, and I'd recorded, and we started tracking the guitar. And as I listened back, I realized that this was not the sound of the song that I heard in my head.
Mm.
So suddenly, for the first time in my life, it was not about me as the singer-songwriter.
Mm.
It was about me as the songwriter and this as the song.
Mm.
And my guitar did not suit the piece.
Okay.
And so I made a very difficult decision. It was a small ego death, to be honest, to not play guitar and to bring someone in whose sound I wanted the songs to sound like, and Sean Franklin was the guy.
Okay, wow. Okay, but just don't take that too far, because then we don't want you in your next album to outsource the guitar and the vocals. as long as you keep your vocals in your songs, I think.
I mean, songwriters do that all the time. I just don't write those kind of songs.
Okay, so next album, you're going to outsource everything to Taylor Swift.
Imagine!
Okay, <Yes. laughs> so let's not lose track too much. So I also felt like it's in a way more up-tempo and more rocky, and it's like, yeah, I mean, even Shotgun Tory and the Hounds had a sense of it, like it being a sort of a trajectory that you were on from your first album, which was the most sort of acoustic and sad.
Yeah.
And that there's like, it gives you a sense of play that you kind of played around in the studio, which you wouldn't normally do in a sad song where it's like trying to keep it as minimal as possible. Was this something, you know, I mean, like, you could have, some of these songs could have been slower, could have been sadder. So was it a conscious decision to make it a bit of a more up-tempo album?
No. In fact, and it's so interesting because in the demos, the tracks were all a little bit slower.
Mm.
We had many discussions about that.
Mm.
And everybody involved in the project had a different idea of the tempo.
Yeah.
I guess what ended up happening was between Barry Burke and I, Barry co-produced the album and he mixed and he mastered and he engineered it. We laid down these scratch tracks in the tempo that they were.
Yeah.
And suddenly we were stuck with it. So it just happened quite organically.
Mm.
Also, it's so fun. The minute you start adding a trumpet to everything and the drums, it's like there's a vibe.
Yeah, you've got a band.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, and I mean, that's nice. It's, I think musically it's probably the most, how do we say, like it's got a lot of flavor to it.
Yes, you know what I mean? Think
it's,
so.
It's not just like the stripped back songs. It's got a lot of flavor to it, which I really liked. I wanted to ask you about Driven to Drink.
Mm.
That was such an interesting song. I wanted to actually ask you about the meaning behind it, because I don't know if I'm out of line here, but of all of the people I know, especially as a musician, you don't seem to have much of an addictive personality. In terms of the fact, like, you don't smoke.
Yeah.
I've never seen you drink to excess. I don't know if you do or you don't or whatever, but I've never seen that. And, you know, compared to a lot of the drugs that have been taken in the music industry, I've never seen you doing any of that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like you're a teetotaler or anything, but you seem to be very in control. So Driven to Drink, it almost like it's a moody song, and it's I expected it to be a song about alcoholism, but that's not something you personally battle with.
No.
So what is the meaning behind Driven to Drink?
So it's about claustrophobia more than anything. It's about that feeling of needing to escape. And I think that we all experience it in our lives as partners and as moms and dads and as friends. Like we all have a moment where everything just feels too much. I know a lot of people who do, who are driven to drink. But yeah, it was more about what was leading, the being driven, rather than the drinking itself.
What I almost got from it is like, I don't know if this is even true at all. That's why I'm asking you about it. But I almost got this thing of like, sometimes you get so frustrated. It was almost like, I got that you were kind of saying like, I wish I was driven to drink because then I would have some kind of solution to this feeling.
A means of escape.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was a day of claustrophobia where I wrote that song. And that first line, drawing a line, closed the door with a sign that says, do not disturb, not for anything. And it's about boundaries. And in the end, I had to go and sit on the floor of the garage to write the song to get some space.
Because you're a mom as well.
100%,
and,
yeah.
And you know, so I struggle with that a lot as a father. It's like, I really love my downtime. And before I had kids, I would like easily spend a day in bed. And it's just that feeling like you can't do that.
No, not anymore.
And you just have to go straight through it. If you're feeling like you can't cope, you almost have to just go straight through it. And
no.
You can understand why people do drink.
Yeah. Agreed.
So let's talk about Barry. So Barry has, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, has he been every single one of your projects or almost all your projects?
The last one, the Shock and Toy and the Hounds album, and this one now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Where does he come from? Barry
Burke. I met him through Laurie Levine, actually. We had before Josie Field moved to the UK, we had a dinner. It was Josie and Laurie and Steve East and Jolene East and me and Oriel from Cortina Whiplash. It was a really nice group of people. And Barry was there. We were chatting about this Hounds album that we wanted to make. And he was like, well, come into studio. Let's record one track. And let's see how it sounds. And it was great. And we went for him. And yeah, we made an album. Oh, in fact, you know what also I made with him is my small Christmas EP. I don't know if you
remember
that.
Oh, wow,
yeah. Yeah. We made a really stripped-down acoustic folk EP of Christmas songs. Yeah.
Who did your albums before then? Was it just like a mix of people?
JP DeStefani engineered and Jay Bones produced Be Brave.
Oh, I actually remembered that Jay Bones had some involvement.
Yeah, gosh, I loved working with him as well. And before that, Are We Fine Yet was Ludwig Bauer from One Big Room Studios in Pretoria.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Do these different people have different processes? I always wonder about that. As a producer, do you have the power to shift? You know, because definitely there is a shift between what I heard you do in your bedroom and what I heard the eventual sound turn out. Is that something Barry pushed you towards, or is it just an organic thing that happens when everyone's in the studio?
I think it's a little bit of both. Barry definitely had an idea of what we were making, and I had my ideas, and together we had to find a happy medium between what we were looking for. We did find a sort of soundscape that we were looking for ahead of time, so we sort of were on the same page.
Yeah.
And then it was a little back and forth. And at the end, you know, making final decisions about, so in Wrong Cue, I go high in the choruses in a quiet, sort of dramatic way. And when we were in studio recording them, Barry had thought maybe what we should do is, he used to be a film director, so he thinks from the point of view of the protagonist. So he had thought that in each chorus, we should go up per chorus. So start low and then add voices and go up and up to its higher end.
So each chorus builds more.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And we tried that, and in listening to it, it wasn't the feeling that I was looking for. So we went back to my original idea to start it high, but we did build in energy towards the end. But it was those small things that he would have an idea and I would be like, oh, and sometimes I would give in and sometimes I would fight for my idea.
How precious are you about your ideas?
Usually not precious at all. But I felt a little bit precious about this EP, actually, surprisingly.
Yeah, I suppose also it's about, if Barry, as you say, is from a film direction point of view, it's possible that he had very strong ideas. So it's almost like it's hard to hear someone have strong ideas of what's something that is like your baby.
Totally. But I trust him implicitly. And our sound references that we had were stuff I admired and loved so deeply that I knew we were kind of on the same page anyway. And I love what he's made so far. And I love what he's made with this EP.
Yeah. No, the results are great. It definitely has you in new territory. And it's like, it feels like once you've started realizing you can do fast songs, slow songs, songs which are busy, songs which are stripped down, you know, then, you know, then for your next project, the sky's the limit. You can pretty much do anything.
Totally. Well, what's so interesting is actually last week I started to write again, which I haven't done in a while.
Mm.
So it's like it's the floodgates have opened,
yeah,
and I'm ready for the next project.
Oh, nice. what made you decide to, I mean, you've done albums so far. What made you decide to focus on a bit of a shorter project this time around?
So, I mean, the whole reason this happened is because Samro put out a call for applications for a micro creation support fund.
Mm.
And they gave 25,000 rand towards these projects.
Mm.
And for that money, I couldn't make an entire album.
Yeah.
So Barry and I sat down and we discussed what we could possibly do for that.
Yeah.
And then you have to put in some money of your own. I think that's the thing with funding is you have to show that you've got some skin in the game.
Yeah.
It can't just be that money. We were going to do 7 tracks, and the 7th track got cut at the last minute because it wasn't working, and we couldn't get it to work, and we had a deadline, and we had to make it happen. So that track will be released as a single in hopefully a month or two.
That's very cool.
Yeah, that's exciting.
Have you ever had anything like that before, like
no.
A song on the cutting room floor that you can use?
Never.
That's amazing. Must feel exciting. So what's interesting to me is so many people, it's been such a reality, how would you say, a reality pull or something like that, this lockdown and everything like that. And it just seems like more creative people I know than ever before are compromising.
Yeah.
And they're doing their day jobs, et cetera, et cetera. And in the middle of all this, you kind of made quite a bold decision, which is that you wanted to exclusively do music.
Yeah.
There was the sense of like, this is a time where everyone needs to buckle down. What made you decide to leap like that into music at a time where most people were doing the opposite?
I realized that we were all struggling and that there were no guarantees, and that so many people I knew who had regular day jobs lost them,
yeah,
and were retrenched. And if you're already compromising and it's still not working out, yeah, for you, you get this one life. Change, yeah.
It reminds me a lot of what Jim Carrey once said. Jim Carrey said that his dad, he was like a talented musician and comedian, his dad, but he stopped doing both and became an accountant, and then he failed at that. And so, so what Jim Carrey said is that he realized that you could fail at something you don't love, so you might as well do something that you do love.
Yes.
You know, it's not like you're not guaranteed success just because you compromise and do something you don't want to do. So you might as well do what you want to do.
It's so devastating. And actually, which leads me to the next thing, is there have been a dramatic and terrible number of suicides.
Hmm.
And I think about that, and I think that, why be unhappy?
And I feel like, you know, your music might fulfill that a lot for you because of how personal the lyrics are. Do you feel like it's a form of therapy for you?
Oh, definitely. I've learned not to be as confessional. I think I've learned for it not to be all my stories, but it's definitely a way that I process. So I do morning pages. I don't know if you've heard of morning pages.
That's something about the artist's way where, yeah, you have to wake up and write.
Yes, exactly.
In a journal.
Exactly. Yeah. 3 long form pages.
Mm.
And that has been incredibly cathartic for me, and it always leads to songs.
Yeah.
So I start in that place with general daily frustrations or things on my mind. And
yeah,
in just the writing, I find what I actually feel about things, and it's like the adult in me is having a conversation with the child in me, and by the end of the conversation, we've reached an understanding about the meaning of whatever it is I'm experiencing. And those meanings often go into the songs. Then I'm like, okay, I've done the processing, now we can write about it.
Mm.
And how do we write about it in a way that is not lectury?
Yeah, and it seems like you've maybe spent quite a while getting to that, because it's when you're young and you're writing songs, it's sort of automatic in a way. It's like you don't have a process, you just, it's sort of almost like vomits onto the page.
Yes, exactly.
Sense. Bob Dylan once said something about that. He said he felt like when his later music, he had to learn to do consciously what he had been doing unconsciously.
Interesting.
And that's, you know, to do with the artist's way, that process of waking up every morning, forcing yourself to write 3 pages. I think that might do it.
Yeah.
It certainly seems to have led to an album which is more, you know, it's like, it's more, it's like some of your earlier stuff, it's like every line you could pinpointed as being a direct thing that happened in your life, whereas now it's a little bit more cryptic, a little bit like more universal. Do you like that about it? Is that the way, the direction you want to go?
Definitely. You know, Amanda Palmer talks about a blender setting,
mm,
that you can choose to put on the songs that you write, where they can either be blender setting one, which is like everybody can tell what the song is about, or blender setting five or six, which is nobody could tell at all what it's about. Mm. And I find, so in It's Gonna Be Fine, that was originally written from a very angry, devastated place. And the line, it's gonna be fine, in the end the best happens. Mm. All the bad parts of you, all the worst parts of me will return to the ashes. It's all about, we're all gonna die,
and it's almost
so it's
a sense
all
of,
gonna be fine.
And there's almost a sense of bitterness about it. It's not like it's all gonna be fine in the let we'll all float up to heaven way. It's almost like whatever,
so,
fine, it's
exactly,
all gonna be
so
fine.
Originally, I was really angry about something when I wrote that song, and then the part of me that has learned to not vomit my dirty laundry all over everyone else. that part of me said, I cannot sing the song live. I cannot record that song. It's too hurtful. And I'm going to take it, and I'm going to shift it a bit. So I rewrote most of the words, and it's become a very light-hearted song about lockdown.
Mm.
And it was not that. And now It's Gonna Be Fine is like kind of light until you reach that last chorus where you hear the words, it's gonna be fine.
Yeah, I like, almost felt like I didn't really know when I listened to it.
Yeah.
How much is this a positive message? Or how much is it that sense of, you know, resignation? It's like, things are going to be fine, but it's because in the end we're all going to die and none of this will matter.
I think it's a little of both, to be honest.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's not necessarily a positive message. It's more just... I don't know. It's had me guessing. It's like, in a way, I feel like you're saying, yes, everything's going to be fine. But in another way, you're saying, you know, nothing's ever going to get better, but maybe that's fine.
No. It's definitely, it's going to be fine. And maybe it's going to be fine. And if it's not fine, then is that, it's all going to be fine in the end. And if it's not fine, it's not the end. But essentially, I do believe in some kind of heavenly afterlife.
Yeah.
So once we die, one hopes that it is going to be fine.
I do too. I don't believe in heaven, but I do believe in that when you die, you're still alive in some way, and that you kind of experience cosmic consciousness. That's what I think happens.
Yes.
And that you can no longer feel pain. I do believe that.
That sounds really nice.
Exactly. So it's kind of like sleep, but better. No, so now Tori's kids are here, and they are tapping on the window, and they are both very, very cute. And they are saying, hi, Mom. I'm wondering, like, housekeeping stuff. I feel like we've spoken about all the, like, important emotional stuff behind the album.
Yeah.
But, like, what's the practical stuff? So, like, how does it release? Where do you get it? Are you going on the road and touring for it specifically?
Those are important questions. So it is released August 26th, Friday, August 26th, which by the time you listen to this episode, it will be that day or after. You can get it on all the streaming platforms. It will be on Bandcamp as well. You can find all my stuff on shotguntory.com, or all my social media stuff is at shotguntory.
Mm.
So you'll definitely find it there.
Tori, of course, T-O-R-I.
Thank you very much. That is pertinent information. Touring it, I don't have a sense of that yet. The flights at the moment are so exorbitant, and fuel prices are so exorbitant that it feels a little bit prohibitive to tour, especially because this EP, if I want to tour it properly, I would do it with an upright bass and a
bass
slide.
I was going to ask you, to what extent, so you would want to recreate the sounds on the album if you can?
Almost, yeah. Roughly. I do. So, but it's all dependent on money. It costs more to have more people on stage.
Yes.
And the current state of the South African music industry is a little bit dire.
It is prohibitive. Say you've got a gig, you're a working musician, say you've got a gig in Cape Town at some point, then how much pressure are you putting on yourself to introduce these new songs?
So I'm playing the new songs anyway.
Oh, so your set right now has got them all in?
It's got the songs in.
Okay.
Yeah. But they're just same singer-songwriter style. And I guess I may have to start putting on my posters and stuff that this is the solo show.
Yeah.
Because if you hear the album and you come expecting that. That's mostly not what you're going to get. Or I might say Shotgun Tori and band or something to advertise those gigs. But those will have to be money gigs because I have to pay everybody.
Yeah.
So it's a different thing. So I might focus on songwriting and making the next project. I'd like to tour it.
Yeah.
But it's also, I've got kids, and if I'm not making money, I can no longer sleep on people's couches and be happy to just have the experience.
Yeah.
Which I used to be very happy to do.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that is the thing about having kids. It really makes everything real. It makes you, and I almost get that from this project as well. Is it's like I said, it's your adult project. There's a sense of like, not necessarily it's going to be fine from the perspective of it's going to be easy. It's just, you know, a sense of like, it has to be fine one way or another. It has to all work out.
Totally. Well, I suppose that's the thing, is it's realistic.
Yeah.
It has to be fine. What other option do you have? You don't have another option.
What has Samro said about it? Have they heard it? Have they? What did they do? How many other people won this grant with you?
So they had 100 to give out. So I was one of 100. They haven't heard it yet. I will be submitting my reports and everything next week. I hope they love it. I hope they are proud of what the money's gone towards.
Well, if there's 100, then I'm sure there's at least like 20 people who just took the money and went to Mauritius.
No, don't say that. So don't sure, say that. People don't do
virtue,
that.
Just by virtue of you having a product, I'm sure you're fine.
Box ticked.
No, it's amazing. It's an amazing EP, and it's, do you know what it is? It's growth. You know what I mean? Mm. It's not like, you know, some artists, for better or for worse, it's the same thing that they're doing, the same sound, whereas I really feel like you have changed. Not only in, like you say, it's becoming a more kind of conscious, more disciplined songwriting process, that you're not just spilling out your emotions, and also just in the way that, you know, you've got your instrumentation, you've got your it's got a mood about it, and it's because you've got the similar musicians on each track, it's like a very consistent mood.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about it. And the last thing I'm going to say is I'm just going to ask, who else haven't you mentioned? I know there's some friends of yours who did backup vocals.
Oh my gosh,
like that.
Emma Dupree, I haven't mentioned her. And in fact, thank you, because the song that is going to be released in a couple of months' time, Emma and I co-wrote.
You and Emma have been collaborating for some time now.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
How did that start out?
Oh my gosh. So we can't remember how we met anymore. But we started performing alongside each other, and we have a stage show where we both sit on stage together and we swap song for song. We design a set list that tells a story between our two songs.
Oh wow.
Between both of our bodies of work. And we sing a little bit on each other's songs here and there. And it is so magnificently beautiful. So she does backing vocals in Wrong Q. I think somewhere else. The track that we'll release is called So Much Money. That's in a couple of months' time. And I cannot wait, because it's basically one of the most exciting songs. So fun. And I'm so sad it's not on this EP.
Yeah, I know. You were saying that you were like, you were a perfectionist about it. You were like, this has to be perfect, and we're not going to release this until it sounds the way I want it to sound.
Yeah, that's exactly.
Which is, I mean, I respect that a lot about you in terms of all of your work, because I'm the opposite. I've always just been like, if I can, you know, if I can get it out on my tape recorder, pressing, you remember when you had tape recorders, you pressed record and play at the same time.
Yes,
I would
love
do
that.
But it seems crafted, you know, I mean, and it's almost made me understand the value of studios, et cetera, which is because I heard your versions that you made in your bedroom and they were brilliant, but it has taken it to a whole new level, the time you spent polishing them.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's so nice to hear.
You don't even have to go to a shop and buy things anymore. You just have to go online and listen to the thing. So,
that's right.
So listeners, listen. Listen to the thing.
Please listen.
It's going to be fine. And when is it launching?
26th of August.
26th of August. What happens if you go on before then?
This won't come out before then. You won't have a chance. Oh, yes, actually. It's like a pre-save link.
Yeah, and then you see the tracks and it's great, and then you have to wait until midnight and then you can play the tracks.
Yes. And in fact, what will have happened by the time you listen to this episode is a pre-launch listening party the night before the album comes out for a group of close friends, which you are definitely coming to.
Yes. I'll see you there.
Yes.
But this is exciting times.
Thank you. It is exciting.
And yeah, and congrats. I almost feel like EPs are also becoming more common, more popular as well, because, you know, it used to be the pressure to make an album used to be a lot about vinyl and CDs and all these things we don't have anymore.
No, totally.
But, I mean, you've created something which I think does work from beginning to end. You know what I mean? It's better to listen to the whole thing. It's not just like a bunch of isolated tracks,
no,
if that makes sense.
Definitely. It's a body of work.
It's got a feeling to it. And that feeling is that it's going to be fine.
It's going to be fine.
I mean, it being you, it's not like an uncomplicated thing of it's going to be fine. But yeah, it is going to be fine.
There is a depth of emotion here.
Yeah, like, that's what I meant.
Somebody asked me words that I'd used to describe it. I used the word lighthearted. And my friends were like, what? This is not a lighthearted album. And then somebody else was like, this is deep and meaningful. Mm. And I was like, wait, but guys, it's so light. They're like, it's optimistic.
Yeah, I think so too. Because what I get from it is it's not lighthearted in the sense that you're talking about flowers and puppies and the grass and the rainbows or whatever, but it's lighthearted in a sense that you're dealing with the same complicated issues you always deal with, but it's almost like got a sense of hope coming out of it, you know?
Yeah, well, I hope everybody listens to it and walks away with that same sense of hope.
Yeah, I mean, what I get from it is that life is messy. We can't help that, but at some point, everything's going to be okay.
Yeah, it's going to be fine. If you are an independent artist whose passion for what you do can inspire or fuel others, get in touch. I'd love to chat. You can find me on shotguntory.com.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.
Drawing a line. Close the door with a sign that says do not disturb. Not for anything. Just pretend I'm not here. That I've gone out for a beer or to paddle up the river to catch summer. Just need a moment to think. If I was the type to be driven, I'd be driven to drink. So you don't worry. Leave me be. I just need a moment to think. If I was the type to be driven, I'd be driven. Driven to drink. Tapped on the dampness, but the cups are not filled still. The dry is ember tonight. We're playing the blame game. Fight the layers of guilt. I tore through to get to this point. To get to this point. Leave me be. Driven to drink.